Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday. Yay, it's Friday, July 10th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. I can't believe we made it again to Friday. These weeks get longer and longer, but wow, it seems like they come faster and faster at the exact same time. It is 68 degrees and sunny here in upstate New York, and it looks like it's going to be an awesome weekend for once. No more rain. So where do we leave off yesterday? It's been a long week. We spent a lot of time looking at being manipulated via our brain chemicals, most notably dopamine and all of the reactions that dopamine can cause. Typically, it is an addictive area of the brain, and the more production of dopamine you have, the more addicted you become to something. It is also the part of the brain we discovered that is larger when you have somebody with a psychopathic disorder and these devices, the fast food, we discovered the music, drugs, addictive substances are all, video games are all causing this addiction to dopamine. We also found that our devices, while this is all going on, our devices are causing us to lose our cognitive abilities and our abilities to remember. So, we ended the show looking at DARPA inserting fibers and remote controls into people to what? To control being able to release different chemicals to elicit different reactions. They had talked about adrenaline, especially in soldiers, or to be able to get rid of fear. And that's something that they've been experimenting with for quite a while now in regards to PTSD. Well, let's take a look at a few other things. Here's a story that I found yesterday just to go along like this mad science gone mad. So we're going to have remote control brain chemicals, but also check this out. We've talked about a complete lack of morals. And again, that was something else we found with dopamine. Dopamine producing, boosting antidepressants in an experiment caused people to want to harm for financial reward, which was lovely. And we have all these ethical questions now that are going on. As we have a society that is addicted to dopamine, we see that we are losing any type of moral and ethical backbone. It's anything goes, mad science gone mad, we'll do anything for a dollar. And I really think that that is the main cause. Well, thank goodness, because it looks like at least in hand and face transplants, they've gotten a modicum of ethics. Says recently, as I listened to a Chicago morning talk radio station, the host Eric and Kathy asked listeners, whose head would you like to have? And remember, we looked at that story as well. That's the Italian scientist that is talking about doing a head transplant. And he found now the individual was a Russian man who had some severe disability who's now stepped right up. Remember, I told you this mad science gone mad is always going to prey upon, the desperate and the dying, the ones that have no chance unless they do this. And, if you put yourself into those shoes, it's a pretty difficult question to ask yourself what you would do. I am so leaning toward I do not want to become Borg. And that was actually, I missed what we called the show yesterday. Hold on, we're going to back up. The name of the show yesterday was Dopamine Addiction, Death of Biology, DARPA, and Us as Borg. And I don't want to become Borg. I really do not want to become Borg, not part of the collective, not under the one world order, thinking all the same thing and having ethical dilemmas that then we have knee-jerk reactions to. I mean, I don't know if you guys saw this. Here, we're gonna backtrack for one second. Talking about ethical dilemmas, right? So we have had this society, apparently, that is just so ultra sensitive to things that it causes big ruckuses, right? We had this broken logic. We did a couple shows about that last week or the week before in regards to the shooting in the black church that all of a sudden somehow became a whole entire issue about the Confederate flag. And now we had to take Confederate flags down everywhere because, oh my God, there's a painful history behind it and it's racist. But what? I mean, honestly, if you look into the history of the Civil War, there was a lot more to the Civil War than racism and slavery. There was a lot to do with economics, with the South being prosperous, with the North saying, hey, you're making money using slave labor, and we don't like that, and the South not backing down. And so the North said, screw you, because I'm going to emancipate your slaves, and what are you going to do about it? It wasn't that he was any way, shape, or form the great emancipator. He was trying to screw the South. There's also the history behind it, the fact that it was a part of our history as a country, and it's become supposedly 1984 on steroids. I mean, I can't even just get over this revisionism that's happening right now. And the fact that nobody's reading books anymore and everything's going electronic, all of a sudden we're seeing history being erased. Well, erased. But wait, let me just get to a story that's even worse than the whole flag issue. Complete full-on retard. Get this. Memphis, Tennessee voters, or Memphis, Tennessee, so I don't know if it was the voters, whoever voted, votes to exhume the body of Confederate general buried in City Park. Yes, they are going to exhume the body of a general, remove his statue, and wait, what's even worse is they're digging up the body of his wife as well. Now, I don't know what you think about this. I mean, like you guys know, I'm all for one and one for all. The Confederate flag doesn't mean anything more to me than the fact that we had a war. There were a lot of reasons for the war. There's a lot of, I'd say, still long-standing sore feelings from many different sides of the fence. I mean, they make this a black-white issue, but there's a North-South issue. It's become a form of identity for the South. But think about what happened. The South rebelled. It was known as the rebel flag. That was the battle flag. Now think about this for a second. As this revisionist history is happening, and not only are we taking down flags, I guess here right about now, they're having some press conference ceremony taking down the flag at the South Carolina Capitol building right as we speak. But as we have this revisionist history happening and all these people standing up going, yay, I mean, I'm looking at all these comments, and sometimes people are just so clueless, because what this is doing is erasing a portion of our revolutionist history. And as things are at levels never before seen for tension, man-made or not, and I really think there's been so much pot stirring that's gone on, divide and conquer. We did a whole show on that too with Brandon, I think, last Friday. You know, they're trying to erase any type of thought for us to stand up. And now let's tie this back to the dopamine. You know, Dale from chat dropped an interesting link to me yesterday after the show. And as a matter of fact, I still have it open here. Thank you very much, Dale. It was out of news-medical.net, dopamine functions. Dopamine is a neurotransmitter released by the brain that plays a number of roles in humans and other animals. Now, we've looked at a whole bunch of different things. I mean, there's the physical and then there's the psychological. The addiction, it's the addiction center of the brain. But listen to what some of the biological functions are. One, movement. As we're all addicted and flooding our brains with dopamine to get our next high, our movement is being affected as we have fat asses sitting on the couch, not standing up and doing anything. Number two, memory. Hey, as we're listening to these videos, feet on the street, man asking questions, and they're asking people what the Declaration of Independence was about or who we separated from and what the 4th of July was all about, and nobody can remember. Or I think we listened to the clip with Mark Dice asking them about 1984 yesterday. Nobody could remember. And remember, Remember, yes, definitely remember that when you don't, and also we learn that our devices are causing us to lose ancillary, unimportant, quote unquote, in our daily lives facts because we depend too much upon them. I'm going to look at another story as well that we have here about, and I thought this was interesting because I always believe this, while having a challenging job could protect you from cognitive decline. Remember, your brain is just a big organ. It's a big muscle, just like any other muscle. And if you don't exercise it, it gets flabby. All right. So anyway, let me get back, before I hit too many things without looking at anything in particular, let me get back to this exhumation. Because I can't even believe this. Oh, wait. Movement, memory, number three, pleasurable reward. That's another dopamine function. Number four, behavior and cognition. Number five, attention. Number six, inhibition of prolactin production. Number seven, sleep. Number eight, mood. And number nine, dopamine has a function in learning. Talk about a great target to take down the American public. Abnormal dopamine levels cause, of course, all kinds of addictions. And we have set America on full tilt. So anyway, all right. Now that we've completely decimated the thinking processes of America, now let's fast forward to this broken logic that started with a shooting that then became a racism ploy that then became a sensitivity ploy that then became revisionist history. I also saw the Epcot Center is taking down the Confederate flag as well. So in Memphis, Tennessee, they now have voted to start exhuming bodies. It says Memphis, Tennessee city leaders unanimously voted on Tuesday night to exhume the body of Nathan Bedford Forrest, a Confederate general, as well as, and he is a KKK leader, former, who is buried in the city's Health Sciences Park, and move him to a private cemetery. According to the report, the city council also voted to move his wife's body from the park and to take down the statue of Forrest sitting on a horse that currently stands in the park. The action is just one of the more recent moves of the city and state leaders pushing for the removal of Confederate symbols. And listen, a friend of mine said the other night, and you know, before this happened, I had flags queued up on Amazon and I should have bought them. But my friend says the other night, hey, you should see if they have any of those die-cast toys from, what was the TV show? Come on, Cupid Doll, for UCY listeners, what on earth was that TV show that they had the Confederate flag that they just now stopped playing on TV land? Who are we? Come on, what is it? Oh, guys, it's Friday. I'm like so brain dead by now, and I still have all the shows to cover for the weekend. Whatever. You know the show I'm talking about, 1970s show where they had the General Lee car. And they now ban it from television. But my friend said to me, why don't you go out on eBay or Amazon and see what they're going for? So I found a place that was still selling the General Lee cars for $22 in the full diecast metal. I go out there. Of course, they are all gone. There were five sets. And I was like, shit, we should buy all five. Dukes of Hazzard, thank you, Anon. I said, we should buy all five for $22. And, of course, they were all gone. And I click back, and there's other resellers selling the same car. They were selling for $190 a piece. I'm telling you guys, this is just so ridiculous. And now we've gotten to the point where we are exhuming bodies. I can't even get it. Have we not crossed a serious moral line here? Because I think we have. If you were buried someplace, what if it was you or your grandmother? You were buried someplace, and maybe, or your grandfather. Your grandfather was a member of the Knights of Columbus, or, you know, a member of the VFW. What say in the Star Trek-esque Next Generation, perfect world, Agenda 21 universe, that they decided that war was bad. So anyone who fought in a war, anyone who was in a VA cemetery, all their flags and their tombstones had to be removed, and they dug them all up and planted them in the garbage dump. I mean, how would you feel? One of the things that I've been seeing, what's so ridiculous, is that the media and the governments, the local governments, are playing this into such a big fucking deal. But I'm seeing all these interviews with black people who are like, hey, the one dude, he's like, well, my uncle, was a cook, and then he was promoted and fought in the black battalion, and they gave him pensions and all kinds of stuff. And I'm really proud of what he did fighting for, the South and my home area where my family lived and whatever. And that's the thing. I mean, this is a part of history, and they are spinning up this race war. So it just pisses me off that we have now taken it to the insane level where we're gonna exhume fucking bodies. All right, I'm not gonna do any more on this because it is such a distraction that everybody who isn't a thinking human being, everyone who is addicted to dopamine, have now put this in the front of their brains because it is what they're telling them on television is important. But thank goodness that someone has ethics, because here's the one story I wanted to get back to. Face and hand transplants raise ethical questions for living donors. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm not going to line up for being a living donor for a face or hand transplant. Says anyway, these Chicago Morning Talk radio show hosts, Eric and Kathy, had asked listeners, whose head would you like to have in response to the news that a Russian man was contemplating a head transplant? Callers answered with famous people like Sandra Bullock or Ryan Reynolds. Oh, how disgusting. While the grotesque and fanciful concept of head transplantation is compelling, other new real forms of organ transplantation like face, hand, and even uterus are becoming more ordinary. I didn't know about uterus transplants. This new kind of organ transplants are called vascularized composite allografts, or VCAs. And while they could be life-enhancing for people with congenital malformations or those who lost body parts through trauma or war, there are many unknowns. I remember, actually, the very first face transplant was that woman who got gored by a pet gorilla, I believe, that one of her friends had, and it mangled her pretty bad. And she was the very first one that I remember, but I didn't know they've been doing these now to the point where they actually have a short, fancy name for them. It says, while they could be life-enhancing for people, blah, blah, blah. Thus, as someone who researches ethical issues in organ transplantation, and like I would say, mad science gone mad, because it's organ transplantation is so old school, but I mean, hands and faces are a little bit newer. But once we get to some of the crazy, like switch flipping in RNA and DNA, I would say we've kind of crossed another line. Our ethics are out a window. Says, I've been grappling with the ethics of VCAs, which are in need of greater oversight, and so is everything in science today. Here are some of the facts. While the Department of Health and Human Services decided in 2014 that VCAs should be overseen and allocated just like any other organ, the Organ Procurement and Transplant Network and United Network for Organ Sharing, the organization overseeing the National Organ Transplant Allocation System, it also implicitly allowed living people to donate VCA tissues. That means, like, alive people, we're going to cut off your hand or your face and give it to somebody else. But patients seeking a VCA transplant only have to wait days or weeks to receive one from a deceased donor. The VCAs don't biologically at least save lives. So there isn't much justification for donations from the living, except that it does increase the pool of donors who might be needed in urgent cases. Otherwise, alternatives are limited. For example, for those who would like a new uterus, they could seek a deceased donor uterus or a surrogate mother. Oh my God. Is anyone thinking Frankenstein? Because I know I am. Taking Heads. Did you ever see that one Mystery Science Theater with the head that wouldn't die in the freaking plate of liquid? Oh, my God. Are you going to have a hand and a face donor section on the back of your license now? Check the organ donor section. It has the write-in and you put face and hands. Oh, my God. When should living people donate? It asks. Well, without a clear policy in place about living VCA donation, one might ask. They do. Could I donate my hand to my brother who came back to Iraq without one? What? But then you'd only have one hand, buddy. Oh, my God. I think he's a victim of high fructose corn syrup. We're going to look at that, too, how sugar makes you stupid. To quickly clarify these questions and set limits on the kinds of VCAs that living people may donate, the United Network for Organ Sharing asked its VCA Living Donor and Ethics Committee experts, including me, not me, the guy writing the story, to develop guidance for transplant centers on how to evaluate and obtain informed consent from people coming forward to become a living CVA donor. Last month, the United Network for Organ Sharing Board of Directors approved the proposed guidelines. These guidelines say that living donations are not ethically permissible for VCAs like hands and faces that would generate dysfunction in the donor. However, living donors of abdominal walls, long bone, uterus, and other tissues may be considered in cases of urgent need for tissues. Oh, my God. Could you imagine being alive and, I don't know, being on a breathing apparatus to keep you alive so they can start dissecting you to use you for body parts? Who in their right mind, no matter how much you want to give back to humanity, who in their right freaking mind would sign up for that shit? Because I know I'm not going to be in line ever. Kind of like eyeball donation. I mean, I always kind of had this thought that if there ever was such a thing as reincarnation and you start giving body parts away, does that mean you come back without those? You know, and just on the off 0.00000001% chance that I was correct in that, I think I'm keeping them all if I can. Jesus. I mean, could you imagine being like a living? It's making me think of like the X-Files movie where they find that whole area where all those bodies are hanging upside down in pods to be used for food. Soylent Green will be next. This is just a horrifying, horrifying thought. And this is all in the name of science. They want to convince you to be a donor because, you know, it's the right thing to do morally and ethically, just like it's the right thing to do to take down Confederate flags so everyone with really sensitive feelings whose hearts are broken over the meaning behind a symbol, the same ones now digging up Confederate generals and his wife to move them, are the same ones convincing you that donating your organs is the right thing to do. They'll be the same ones convincing you in the future that Nana is a tax on the healthcare, on the socialized healthcare system. So it's her time to go to make room and resources for the younger generation. I mean, look at this PSYOP. Get rid of individualism and become part of the Borg. Become part of the collective, and that's the story we're going to end the show on. There is a horrifying experiment going on that is our worst nightmares, like, ever. I ran across it right after the show finished yesterday. It always happens like that. So we're going to end the show on that and the week. All right, back to this living body part donor. I agree that there may be a compelling reason to consider a living VCA donor in these scenarios, but only if doctors are well informed of the risks and the benefits to themselves and to the recipients. What are the risks and benefits to both the donors and the recipients? Only about 140 VCA transplants from deceased donors have ever occurred worldwide, so we know little about how the recipients are faring. Recent studies of hand, upper extremity, and face transplant recipients worldwide found that the function and quality of life improved, although there are ethical concerns over exposing otherwise healthy individuals to adverse effects of lifelong anti-rejection medicine, which is also necessary to prevent the body from rejecting the tissue. You know, I mean, some of the other stuff that they've done is they're getting so far on stem cells and being able to grow organs on these sugar scaffolds. And I saw now that they've been able to take just skin cells. Remember in the old days, it used to be from embryonic cells. Back in the days of Reagan, even, when President Reagan was in office, they had banned all that and all the research went overseas. But they don't need embryonic stem cells anymore. They can literally turn them back into whatever those beginning cells are called. They can turn into anything right from your skin. Trust me, they've come a long way, and they're able to remote control freaking injecting or producing brain chemicals, for God's sakes. So why couldn't they grow a face is what I guess what I'm saying. They can 3D print anything. They got cars now. They got, you know, organs, livers, hands, you know, all these different things. I don't think it's going to be too long before you can 3D design with 230-point facial AI facial recognition. You can design you any type of designer face that you want. Have it 3D printed with those skin cells that they're using, with your own skin cells made of your own stem cells, so you don't have to deal with anti-rejection drugs, and slip it on like a fucking mask. You know, dun, 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 dun. Oh, what was that movie with the remake? Tom Cruise. Didn't he have the face mask where he could slip on and off? But these would be like living masks. I think that that may already be being done somewhere in the spy world. You know, changing identities. And you know how important that's going to be someday too, when you're doing facial recognition to access the network, which it'll become once the FCC and the globalists all take it over and all the economic systems collapse. So we're all electronic and we have to authenticate ourselves looking into our mobile device camera using our iris print and our 230-point facial recognition. You won't be able to hide from anything or from anybody. If you had five or six different identities, though, with different printed faces that you could swap on and off, you might be able to get around the system. I don't know, hackers out there, find a way to print faces or at least face masks. All right, anyway, it'll be a great underground little business, I'm sure. If we look at living kidney and liver donors, we do just fine after donating, but others have experienced bad outcomes post-donation. For example, in living donors' accounts of their experiences with donation, some experienced greater pain than expected, post-traumatic stress disorder, and did not feel well taken care of by the healthcare system, despite having performed this generous act. Considering these outcomes after 369,000 kidney transplants in the United States since 1988, how well will VCA donors fare? Well, ultimately, as the living donor, you can decide what is your own in your own best interest. But with so little information about donor or recipient outcomes, potential donors cannot make informed treatment decisions. Like, are these, I can't even get over the fact that people are deciding how their body parts are going to get taken. But they don't talk about, are they awake? Are they like dying in a hospital bed and they're hacking off hands? Says they may be motivated to donate solely based on their emotional relationship with the patient, as many studies show to be the case. It's like someone who wants to donate long bone tissue to a relative without knowing whether or not the living donor of the same long bone tissue had incurred any leg dysfunction after donating. While we need pioneer donors, of course, be the first to line up whose outcomes we learn from, first human trials. They're always looking for the guinea pigs out of the pool of the desperate. We also urgently need other kinds of research, such as on the quality of life before or after donating or receiving a VCA. Finding out what information potential living VCA donors need to know about donors and recipient outcomes is essential for improving the consent process to enable future donors to make informed decisions. And until this happens, living VCA donation is no longer considered experimental, where greater oversight is needed to protect living donor safety. Now, this guy says head transplants won't be happening anytime soon. Well, I heard within the next 2 years is what they're hoping. With other living VCA donations now permissible, it is only a matter of time before more people step forward to offer tissues to patients in need, and healthcare system needs to be prepared to protect potential VCA donors by optimizing the informed consent process. Yeah. So once you ink, that's another question I have. Once you ink, I don't think I'm going to waste any more time. Once you ink that document that says that you're going to donate living tissue, I got a question. Can you back out at the end? Like, what if you have second thoughts and you say, nah, you know what? You guys are walking in here with a bone saw, and I'm not liking the looks of that much at all. And I've decided that I'm not going to go along with that. Are you legally obligated? Does anybody know? Because I would really think that that would be something for some further research as well, because that would be insane if you were legally obligated. Or had to pay some sort of like penalty after the fact against the contract because they spent time and money like keeping you alive or whatever. All right, anyway, so our ethics have gone right out a window. Our American public has gotten to the point where we don't even know which way is up or down. We discovered that dopamine has a lot to do with stupidity, and the stupidity comes through addiction. I think people just do things because it gives them the next fix and they follow that dangling carrot. There's something I wanted to play here, and this might be a good point to do it. Let me add myself. I got to make sure I don't have anything playing in the background, I hope. Hold on. All right. I'm hoping. All right, here we go. I don't know. I've had a little bit of trouble this morning bouncing between two computers, so excuse me if I've seemed a little bit scattered. One works and then it doesn't, so I've been doing both machines. Okay, here we go. To show just how people are manipulated by the dangling carrot, and we learned that high fructose corn syrup was one of those substances that causes dopamine production. So high fructose corn syrup is in just about everything we eat, any type of processed food. It is also in chocolate, or at least some chocolate. This happens to be, I think it's a Hershey's chocolate bar. Wait till you check out this new Feed on the Street video, because I really couldn't believe it.
/ Mark Dice.
Hit me up on Facebook. And hold on, we got to move it to the beginning and remembered where I was. Here we go. People, I'll let you hear it.
It's your lucky day today. You win a free 10-ounce silver bar, pure silver bullion, or a free Hershey's king-size chocolate bar.
Take this one.
You'll take the chocolate bar. Who needs a 10-ounce bar of silver? No. Have a good day. It's your choice. A free 10-ounce bar of silver bullion or a free king-size Hershey bar.
I think I'll take the Hershey bar.
Go ahead. It's your lucky day. Just fresh out of the refrigerator.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Who needs a 10-ounce bar of silver when you can have a good, delicious bar of chocolate, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
You'd rather have the Hershey bar than the silver bar?
Yes, I would.
Oh, you would. Okay.
Yeah, the Hershey bar, you can't eat the silver bar.
Yeah, that's right. You can't eat the silver. What are you going to do with a 10-ounce bar of silver, right? Which one do you want?
Probably the chocolate, because I'm a girl and it's been a cranky day.
Okay, it's yours. Eat it quick, because it's getting hot out here.
Fine.
Just offering people a free Hershey bar today, or a free silver bar. Which one would you prefer?
Silver? I'll take the...
Who needs a silver bar? Lucky day today, a free chilled Hershey bar straight out of the fridge, or this bar of silver. It's 10 ounces.
What are you guys doing?
Which one do you want?
Well, I don't have any way to do anything with the silver.
Okay. So you prefer the Hershey bar?
Yeah, but is it real?
Yes. Just straight out of the fridge.
Doesn't seem real.
The Hershey bar doesn't seem real. I mean,
I gotta stop here. The thank you very much to Joe Friday, by the way, for this video. I missed this upload. The silver bar is worth approximately $150, mind you. And did you hear what this woman just asked? It doesn't look real. She doesn't say the silver doesn't look real. She said the Hershey bar doesn't look real. I mean, guys, we are so doomed. This is what dopamine, I'm telling you. And I mean, money can be a dangling carrot too, but these people aren't putting two and two together. We are brain dead. The American public is absolutely brain dead. All right, we're going to play a little bit more.
We could go into this coin shop. We could verify the silver bar is real.
No, that's all right.
It's real.
I always take chocolate.
Always take chocolate. Enjoy.
Thank you.
You're a winner today. Oh. We're offering a free Hershey bar right out of the fridge.
Okay.
Or a free silver bar. It's 10 ounces. It's a little tarnished. Which one do you want?
I don't know. Chocolate bar.
Go ahead.
Right.
It's yours. You're a winner.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a good day. You're a winner.
What am I winning?
You win either a free 10-ounce bar of tarnished old silver bullion or this Hershey bar just out of the fridge.
What's going to happen?
Which one do you want?
The candy.
Go ahead. It's yours. All right, we got another winner for the Hershey Bar giveaway. Thank you.
Thanks for watching.
I don't know. I mean, when I see these things, and I will guarantee you that if any of us went out into public, and I mean, everybody, if you got a cell phone, there's got to be some sort of audio recording on there. Start asking questions, because I will guarantee you every single one of us are going to come upon people that are as clueless as some of the people in these videos. And all my point is, by showing these or listening to these videos, is the fact that the American public does not have any type of thinking ability left. There's no 2 and 2 equals 4. There's no connect dot A to dot B. Nobody's doing critical thinking anywhere. Now, here's a story too that came out of Dr. Mercola, July 8th, 2015. Eating sugar makes you stupid. Says, compelling research shows that your brain has some great plasticity, which you can control through your diet and lifestyle choices. Unfortunately, the American public has been so grossly brainwashed by the sugar and processed food industries into believing that sugar is perfectly reasonable nutrient that belongs in a healthy diet. And of course, like we saw, sugar and high fructose corn syrup stimulate that addictive portion of the brain that produces the dopamine. A piece of fruit or even a treat like ice cream isn't going to cause you too much trouble, provided it is truly just that, a treat, and not something you overindulge in. But most Americans, however, are overindulging, yes, because we become addicted to it. And that is just putting it mildly, and also to the fatty foods. Most Americans consume 1/3 of a pound of sugar per day, half of which is processed fructose, ding, ding. Other statistics found in Dr. Richard Johnson's book, The Sugar Fix, suggests that about 50% of Americans consume as much as half a pound, more than 225 grams of sugar a day. Talk surrounding excess sugar consumption is often centered around obesity, to which it does contribute. However, this is an issue far more than weight gain alone. When you consume too much sugar, it leads to serious imbalances in your body, including microbial changes. And yeah, you got to remember the gut bacteria as well, that have far-reaching effects on your health. Obesity, type 2 diabetes, and even heart disease are commonly known to be caused in part by a poor diet with excess sugar, including fructose. But brain troubles, these too, are strongly linked to eating sugar. unbeknownst to many Americans, in a study in mice published in the journal Neuroscience, it revealed that a high sugar diet leads to changes in the gut bacteria, ding ding, that were in turn related to significant loss in the cognitive flexibility, which is a measure of your brain's ability to adapt to changing situations. Maybe that is a reason for this cognitive dissonance that we have so prevalent in our civilization. Nobody wants to hear the new or the real facts because they're living in their own little world that makes them happy. Impairments in both long and short-term memory were also noted, and we also noted memory problems with the dopamine as well. After 4 weeks of consuming excess amounts of sugar, the mice performed poorly on various tests related to mental and physical function when compared to mice fed a normal diet. Further, an analysis of the mice microbiome revealed an imbalance of bacteria in the gut of the high sugar mice directly correlated with their poor performance on tests of cognitive flexibility. Kathy Magnuson, a professor of OSU College of Veterinary Medicine and principal investigator with the Linus Pauling Institute, said in an Oregon State University news release, quote, "It is increasingly clear that our gut bacteria or microbiota can communicate with the human brain, and we did a whole bunch of shows on that. Bacteria can release compounds that act as neurotransmitters, stimulating sensory nerves or the immune system, and affect a wide range of biological processes." Notice, though, too, nobody's mentioning dopamine in here. We are not sure what messages are being sent, but we are tracking down the pathways and its effects. This isn't the first time sugar has been linked to declines in brain function. In 2012, researchers investigated the effects of high fructose corn syrup, and I remember reading this study. In high fructose syrup, similar to high fructose corn syrup, a cheap sweetener six times sweeter than sugarcane, which is used in many soft drinks, processed foods, condiments, and even some baby foods. The team sought to study the effects of a steady intake of the super processed concentrated form of fructose. They fed rats a fructose solution as drinking water for 6 weeks and then tested their ability to remember their way out of a maze. The rats fed fructose syrup showed significant impairment in their cognitive abilities. Guys, I mean, listen to this. And we know what the Western diet consists of. It's sugar, sugar, and more sugar, and it is in all of our foods. I mean, it's even in freaking ketchup, if you can believe it. And they have, in just 6 weeks, a significant impairment in cognitive abilities where they struggled to remember their way out of the maze. They were slower, and their brain showed a decline in synaptic activity. Their brain cells had trouble signaling each other, disrupting the rat's ability to think clearly and recall the route that they had learned just 6 weeks earlier. Additionally, the fructose-fed rats showed signs of resistance to insulin, a hormone that controls your blood sugar and synaptic function in your brain. Because insulin is able to pass through the blood-brain barrier, it can trigger neurological processes that are important for learning and memory. So again, another substance related to learning and memory as well, just like the dopamine. Consuming large amounts of fructose, and maybe, I mean, I'm really thinking that dopamine is a big key here in all these processes. I really do. Consuming large amounts of fructose may block insulin's ability to regulate how your brain cells store and use sugar for energy needed to fuel thoughts and emotions. And we have all these people with these overreacting emotions. We can't have our feelings hurt ever. In school, they teach them there are no losers and everybody gets a trophy, Johnny. That really bothers me. Kids need to learn how to lose. Kids need to learn how to be made fun of and to even cry and feel bad. Adults need to learn how to feel the loss of a boyfriend or a pet without having to take levodopa to feed their dopamine fix. And this is just, we have become the society of lab rats, and they figured it out. They know how to manipulate it all. I still blame a lot of this on Edward Bernays, the consumables, the consumeristic society, and the dangling carrot. And they have known how to play us like a fiddle. And we just bought into all of it through the convenience. I actually saw, I was digging into that dopamine project, some of the other stories last night, and there was a whole article on the addiction to convenience. And we absolutely do. This 21st century America, we are all addicted to our conveniences, not just our devices, but everything has to be easy. Everything has to be quick and not messy. Push a button to make it happen. Nobody knows how to get their hands dirty anymore, or work hard, or sweat. All right. And sweating's important because it gets all the toxins out of your system. So they've just broken all of biology is what they've done. Anyway, consuming large amounts of fructose may block the insulin's ability to I read that already. In this case, the second group of rats was given omega-3 fats in the form of flaxseed oil and DHA in addition to the high fructose diet. After 6 weeks, this group of rats was able to navigate the maze better and faster than the rats of the non-DHA group. And they've said for a long time that oils and cholesterols are really good for your brain, especially your omegas, because your brain is made of fats. And they think that a lot of the dementia and the Alzheimer's that we're seeing now could have something to do with the 20 plus years that we sold to the American people that they should go on a low-fat diet. I mean, I know my mother and all of her friends did it in the 70s and the 80s. Everybody was on diet this and diet that. Sodium saccharin back in the 70s, and then that Splenda shit and whatever. Faygo, the Faygo Nazi pop. Researchers concluded that DHA is protective against fructose's harmful effects on your brain. DHA is essential for synaptic function and helps your brain cells transmit signals to one another, which is a mechanism that makes learning and memory possible. Your body cannot produce enough DHA, so it must be supplemented through your diet in wild-caught seafood or a supplement like krill oil. And trying to find anything that doesn't have radiation in it might be a little difficult. Many Americans are seriously deficient in omega-3 fats, which may be especially vulnerable to the harmful effects of excess fructose. All right, I'm running out of time, so I don't want to. This is actually a really long story. Another section of this, even dementia has been linked to a poor diet. So stay away from sugar, people. There's another study here. Why having a challenging job could protect you from cognitive decline. And like I said, exercising your brain like an organ, doing research every day, reading, 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 I think is what differentiates us from the very clueless masses that are having. I mean, we're seeing a disorder. This is almost like there is a mass mental illness going on here that is chemically induced through our environment. And chemically, I mean, I used to think that it was the upbringing, but it's the upbringing coupled with the devices and the environment that's causing this chemical reaction within the body that's making us stupid, that's making us unable to think, unable to reason, unable to have any logic anymore. I mean, I can't, honestly, guys, I cannot believe that they are digging up bodies now in the name of being politically correct. How insane is that? Here, wait, let's get to one more story about your lifestyle choices, because I thought this one was interesting as well. You know, we talked about the dopamine reaction in the body by eating sugars. But wait, this is the one story that's on two computers. I've tried to make it come up. And I'm getting that DNS probe not found. So one more try. Going, going, going. I did read it last night. But basically what it talked about, I guess we're not going to be able to get there. Basically what it talked about, and I did have a little section cut out, healthy diet and lifestyle choices may, oh, and here we go. It came up. Healthy diet and lifestyle choices may actually reprogram your brain, according to a new study. And this is exactly what we've been saying. It's been programmed with the dopamine addiction, and now we can deprogram it. After 6 months of weight loss programming, the reward center of the brain has changed significantly in the experiment group, specifically in the areas associated with learning and ding, ding, ding addiction. It's pretty amazing. Perhaps it's no surprise that scientists have finally demonstrated what many of us have already intuitively discovered. By making conscious lifestyle choices, it is possible to retrain your brain to crave healthy foods instead of fatty foods. And, you know, there was one other headline that I found this morning. It was a study in Bloomberg out of 2011. Fatty foods are as addictive as cocaine, shows a growing body of scientific evidence. And, of course, we know now why it's as addictive, because it works on the dopamine centers. And cocaine is one of the substances that also works on that center. It's just amazing how all this connects together. Says, even though we are conditioned to love and even rely upon the fat-filled sugar and carb overload we experience from many unhealthy foods, we are not intrinsically bound to the cycle. It is possible to alter the brain's reaction to unhealthy foods through changes in diet and education, according to a new study published in Monday's Nutrition and Diabetes. According to the study's co-contributor, Susan Roberts, PhD, quote, we do not start out in life loving French fries. This conditioning happens over time in response to eating repeatedly what is out there in the toxic food environment. Scientists have long theorized that over a lifetime of eating these toxic foods, we form unhealthy food addiction circuits in the brain, there we go, that are difficult to reverse or break, leading to a lifetime of junk food cravings and long-term consequences like sickness and obesity. Guys, and I mean, this even ties into the GMOs and this Western decline of physical conditions that we end up with. This is all the same mechanism, every single part of this. So your key to start becoming free is to absolutely change your diet, people. Your diet is the number one first step. Get off of anything boxed and processed. Start eating lots and lots and lots of greens. Grow your own garden. We've known it instinctively, like you said, but now the proof is in the pudding. If they say that. God, there's two more things I want to hit, and I only have about 3 or 4 minutes left. I think we need to hit the disturbing story, and we'll have to save the other ones for Monday. This is out of Machines Like Us. This is one of those transhumanist publications that I read. Not really transhumanist, but they talk about a lot of stuff like that. MachinesLikeUs.com, July 9th, 2015. Monkey brain net. And guys, this is probably the most disturbing story yet I have ever read. Monkey brain net, quote unquote, raises prospects of human brain-to-brain connection. In two separate experiments, scientists have formed a network from the brains of monkeys and rats, allowing them to cooperate and to learn as a super brain. This is like making a cloud full of brains. This is freaking Ray Kurzweil's wet dream. Scientists have linked together the brains of three monkeys, allowing the animals to join forces and control an avatar arm in research that raises the prospect of direct brain-to-brain interfaces in humans. In a second experiment, the brains of four rats were wired together in a brain net, enabling the rodents to synchronize their neural activity and collaboratively solve a simple weather forecasting problem that individual rats struggled to complete. The experiments, which have echoes of the Borg. Oh my God, that was my first thought. A sinister alien collective in Star Trek challenge the notions that our minds will always be ultimately isolated from those of others. And you guys, I mean, when I titled the show this yesterday, I had not seen the story. Miguel Nicolelis of Duke University, behind the work, has previously pioneered development of machine brain interfaces that could allow amputees and paralyzed people to directly control prosthetic limbs and exoskeletons. His latest advances have clinical benefits in brain rehab, he predicts, and could also pave the way for organic computers. Collectives of animal brains linked together to solve problems. Essentially, we have created a super brain, he said. A collective of brains created from three monkey brains. No one has ever done that before. You guys, tell me if we have not crossed the line on just so many fronts. I think that's going to be part of the title of today's episode, Crossing That Moral Line Forever. I mean, we have done it. We're digging up freaking bodies because somebody's feelings were hurt. We're cutting off arms and faces, and we're trying to decide, man, thank goodness we decided that it had to be done after people were dead. And now we're connecting brains of living creatures together in a Borg collective to become living super brains. Just looking, there's way more to the story. It says in a second paper published, the scientists directly linked the brains of rats together via two-way electrical connections that allowed the scientists to both deliver stimulus to neurons and read out electrical activity. I wonder if this has anything to do with the DARPA experiment we were reading about yesterday. In one experiment, an electrical impulse was delivered to the brain of one rat, and the other rats learned to synchronize their brain activity, mimicking the first rat's brain response. In a sense, they were experiencing what the first rat felt secondhand. In another demonstration, pulses of stimulation that increased or decreased were delivered to the brains of individual rats, raising their temperature and barometric pressure information. The rats were able to combine the information to produce a collective output that predicted an increased or decreased chance of rain. So we're also turning them into little brain collective weather predictors. All right, guys. Well, that is where we're going to end the show this Friday. We have super brain rat borgs. All right, everyone, make sure you stick around. There's all kinds of new stuff tonight. Josh, live at 6 p.m. Eastern. Primer Time with Nick and Michael is going to be there. Random Replay, Truth on the Tracks, this week's episode with Brainerd Turbeville. Reality Bites, brand new show with Neil Foster, 10 p.m. Eastern. And Antimedia Radio with LaVon at 11. All live. All right, guys, make sure you stick around Saturday, Sunday as well. See you on Monday.